Welcome to our business backstory. This version, we are meeting with, discussing, enjoying the company with Fire Chief Justin McDonald from Arcata Fire District and Vice President, Board Member, and Associated Man About Town, Randy Mendoza. How you doing, guys?
Hi, Brian.
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
What are some of the challenges that fire districts have? I mean, certainly the function of fire departments has changed over the years. What is the biggest challenge that you deal with?
Our biggest challenge, I think, is the ever-increasing demand for services. You know, I just finished last year's stats, and in 2019, we saw about a 15% increase in call volume. So we're still dealing with staffing levels and funding levels of yesteryear, and yet the demand for services and the requirements from state and federal agencies on us are ever increasing.
Now, when you say call volume, I would think folks that are unfamiliar would consider there have been that many more fires? Fire department, fire.
Sure. No, call volume is not dependent upon fires. Our fire-related incidents have been pretty steady. We average about 1 to 2 structure fires a month, although it seems like over the last year we kind of were in a little bit of a slump, maybe a little bit less than that. So calls are more driven on rescue EMS, and then a vast majority of it are the public service calls that we get sent out to, lift assists, alarm calls, things like that.
Randy, as a board member, would you categorize fire departments as an evolving or more of a static?
Oh, I think it's evolved quite a bit in the years that I've been associated with emergency services. I know in law enforcement used to do the first responder thing, and that's way gone. I mean, law enforcement doesn't have time to do first responder calls anymore, and that's gone to the fire service. So, you know, the dilemma is training people to be able to do these high risk, you know, things with, you know, potential high consequence of error. Keeping people trained 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, being able to staff vacations when people are sick, you know, maternity leave, those are the things. And that, from a board member standpoint, that's a really tough call. That's a really tough thing to see that we are able to cover those every day, every hour. So that's been one of my big lessons learned since I've been associated with the district.
And the district is kind of a hybrid one. I mean, you got some guys that are paid, some guys that are volunteering, some guys are gals, some guys are guys. Those dynamics, does that make the district more unique or more broad-based to be able to handle some of these challenges that it's kind of evolved into and what it will be evolving into the future?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with, you talk about, is the fire service evolving? And yeah, I think our district is totally, I mean, we started off 1884 as 100% volunteer. That's kind of what happens. The town burns down and the community says, hey, you know, we gotta fix this. Over the years, however, because of the increase in demand on service, it becomes harder and harder to expect Joe Citizen to be able to leave work or come in and run a call. So at some point in time, the district was formed because the city of Arcata was providing services outside the city limits. And so this combination, volunteer paid, city stuff, district stuff, kind of came to existence. So I think it's a good start in the right direction. It is probably economical in the grand scheme of things. You're not paying for a 100% paid department. But on the flip side, you know, I've got 2 firefighters on my fire engine, and you know, the industry standard, at least locally, is 3, and the national standard is 4, and so you can do the math real quick and see we're outgunned right off the get-go when we have a fire.
In that kind of a scenario, I would think that it's also more flexible. You got two that are running to a site, and you've got however many volunteers. The volunteers don't have to go down to the fire station, then get dressed, then climb on board. In the meantime, everybody's waiting. You don't need four guys to pull hose.
So it's an interesting predicament. We saw this back when Chief McFarland was coming on board and we passed the tax and doubled our staffing. The call volume at the time was becoming too much for volunteer responders, that they just didn't have the time to run in for every medical aid or things like that. So we increased our staffing to decrease the burden on these volunteer responders. And all of a sudden this paradigm changes where people are like, well, yeah, those the career firefighters will take care of it. I'll just go if it's bad. And so it's not unique to our organization. I mean, that's kind of one of those, if you know as a community member, nobody's going to show up. You get your rear end out of bed and you go pick up the truck and you go on the call. But, you know, if 2 a.m. when it's rainy and nasty out, do you get out of bed to go do it? Well, there's a couple guys out there that can handle it. So I think that paradigm shifts, and you know, and that's what you get with having career firefighters. They're on duty, ready to go no matter what.
Both you guys are obviously aware of the tradition of the department and volunteers and the partnering, I guess, with a lot of the college students. Certainly the initiation process has changed significantly over the last decade since Randy and I went to school.
Just a decade?
Yeah.
I'm older than you.
Yeah. How has that changed the dynamic of the department? Has it made it more career-focused, more somber, we're here to save lives? Has it taken the fun out? I mean, what has been that change?
Well, it's definitely a different department. I know when I first came to Arcata in 1977, I met Archie Bernardi at the back door of the fire hall because I was a first aid instructor back then and a CPR instructor, and I was told to go meet Archie. And so my involvement, you know, started back then. So, yeah, it has changed a lot. But, you know, things do evolve, and the volunteer part is still very strong in the department. It's just different. There's a logistics unit now which people can volunteer to work on the department's volunteer logistics unit. They call it the VLU, and that's been very well attended. We have a good group there.
Now, is that like office
work? No. They have their own truck. They have their own vehicle, and they come out and they'll assist at scenes, and you know, they bring water, and they do the gopher work that, you know, so that the firefighters can fight the fires.
Support.
Yeah. And then also the volunteers are very supportive in terms of writing grants. You know, Rob Cannon, the president of the volunteers, is a great grant writer. So a lot of the things that we have been purchasing have been through grants that Rob has written and successfully gained. And also the volunteers own the downtown Arcata station. So that is tremendous support to the district. You know, the volunteers, the district pays rent to that, but basically it's all the volunteer organization is there to support the district and the people of our district. And it's a tremendous value, and they're tremendous support.
You mentioned funding, and certainly that's a challenge with the increasing standards, the wearing out of pieces of gear, things of that nature. Grant writing, I would think, is a critical component to keeping the doors open and the trucks running.
It sure is. You know, one of the, you know, for one-time purchases, yes, the problem with grants is that they don't usually renew themselves. They go for short periods of time. So yes, to purchase expensive items that the district needs, yes. For the most highly costly part of the organization, you know, personnel, not necessarily. So that's
costly. That must be an Arcata term.
Is that in your book? Yeah.
that's my Arcata accent.
There you go. Justin, from your perspective, obviously Grant are critical, but to rely on grants as you're operating is
it's
sketchy at best.
It's a Band-Aid. I think it would be a good way of looking at it. Up to and including, you know, we've been fortunate to have been recipients of funding, one-time fundings through Major Z. They've offset our cost to dispatch. They provided us with brand new air packs, so every firefighter that goes interior has to take their own air in there with them. If the fire district was to have purchased that, it would have cost us about $350,000. And we didn't have that in the budget. And again, those air packs have a 15-year lifespan. Just like the gear that the firefighters wear is a 10-year lifespan. So all of these things, you know, not to mention fire engines have a... You have to start planning for it. And so while grants are great, they can help us with it. It doesn't help the 80% of our cost is the people that run the fire engines. And, you know, you can have all the best equipment and all the shiniest fire engines and new fire stations, but if you don't have the people to go on the calls,
it's called a museum.
Yeah, exactly.
So because there's a special district that was formed, do you get any general fund support from the city of Arcata or from the county of Humboldt, or is this a different critter?
It's a little bit of a different critter. Because we were one of the older districts, we formed up shortly after the special district law went into effect, we were able to get a portion of the county's ad valorem tax. So about 50% of our income comes from property tax, your property tax you pay. The rest of our income is pretty much self-generated by either a benefit assessment or a special tax. That's about another 39%. Over the last couple of years, we've started doing some revenue recovery for car accidents and nuisance calls. Again, none of that, as I told the board, we need to explore all of our options for funding, but that doesn't fix our problem. We definitely need to secure more funding to keep up with inflation and staffing.
So even though I attended Eureka City Schools, I see that 50 plus 39 doesn't equal 100.
No.
There's a gap.
Yes.
How do you fill the gap?
Well, this is the best part about being a special district is the community has local control. So you as a resident, as a voter in the Arcata Fire District, when the fire district puts the initiative on the ballot, you have control over whether you support it or not. And, you know, it cuts both ways that when the community has spoken, we don't get to collect extra tax dollars. So it is the money that is taxed here locally for the fire district stays with the fire district. It doesn't go to the city, doesn't go to the county, doesn't go off to the state. So, you know, that's a big plus for community members to know that the money that they spend for fire protection services stays within the Arcata Fire Protection District.
I'm sure that there are other departments that are jealous of that.
Well, I don't know how jealous it could be because it's not enough.
It may not be enough, but it's guaranteed that it's coming there. And I would think for the voters, it's not like a gas tax and it kind of floats off and it doesn't end up with roads. It just kind of goes off somewhere and you don't know where it goes.
Yes, but from the board standpoint, special districts have very few avenues to have funding. You know, so we can't go out and do different taxes like cities do or counties do. So there's very few ways for special districts to raise revenues to pay the bills. And of course, again, we have to... What we do is super important. You know, when someone dials 911, you know, it might be once in your lifetime, but when you dial 911, you want that red fire engine to show up. And they're going to show up whether it's a fire, or they're going to show up whether you have a medical emergency. And often that fire engine is going to be there before the ambulance is going to be there. So, you know, that's the worry, is that, you know, the work is very critical. It's very important. It's hard to find people to do these jobs. And and it's hard to pay for it. And that's one of the board's biggest challenges, I think.
So I can chime in real quick. You know, we've been seeing the sheriff has been putting out there that they're short-staffed and they're in emergency mode working. I think he said now they're on 10 hours. We have lost, through attrition and through budget cuts, three positions in our organization. So every day we're at minimum staffing. Every day that somebody calls in sick, takes a day off, like normal work practices, we're forcing employees to work beyond the normal, the work hours. So there's, in our organization, that is a huge stressor on the system. Here's the other side of it. We get criticized as, high paid government employees. But the sad part is our firefighter, our first step firefighter coming in, makes barely above minimum wage, a little over $14 an hour. And I can't compete here locally. I mean, you can go get a job at Humboldt Bay Fire and make more doing the same job. And then out of the area, I've got, I think we've lost three or four firefighters that went out to the Bay Area. And the guys go down there and they're making way more and working way less. So we're in a big predicament up here with, and my heart goes out to the sheriff with recruiting and retaining good quality employees.
And when you say you're down, or the staffing is down, is that it's budgetary? Is that,
yes,
because costs are up, or is that 11% shortfall that you were referencing earlier with the
funding? Well, it's a little of both, and it goes back to the grant. So a few years ago, we were able to secure a federal grant to increase our staffing. The whole concept behind this grant was the feds will kind of help you start it, and then, you got to pay for it and carry it on. That was back when the district floated Measure A through, and it didn't pass. And so the board at the time had to start making some tough decisions, and luckily firefighters were looking for jobs elsewhere, and we didn't have layoffs, but we had to essentially leave our three positions unfilled. And
now, are those positions, Chief, that volunteers can fund or provide the service for, or is this a different kind of apples and oranges?
It's kind of apples and oranges. Our volunteers will come and ride along with our career staff, but a position, you know, they're covering 10 shifts a month, 10 24-hour shifts a month, at a minimum, you know. That's a steep ask for a volunteer. You know, hey, we're not going to give you any money, but come in and donate 24 hours of your life each month. So that's a pretty steep ask. We're trying to explore various options. Right now we have a couple firefighter interns. They're Fire Academy grads from one gentleman's local, one's from Merced, and they're up here trying to get experience, because you can go through an academy, but you can't get your certificate signed off until you have experience. So they're actually working kind of this hybrid. They work shifts, and they have, you know, I got the carrot. They need my signature, so they need to give me a lot more time riding with our crews to get their experience. So,
Randy, as a board member, do you see an outcome that is sustainable in this scenario? Because certainly, while the population for Humboldt County, I guess their projecting has gone down a little bit, McKinleyville is one area that has seen growth. It's not like there's less stuff going on, so you need more BODs out there. More and more dependence on volunteers?
Well, we're not seeing people there's a tremendous amount of training and time and commitment for the fire side of the volunteers. Like I said earlier, we have volunteers that are willing to come and help the district and the organization. Not too many people want to go through, or able to leave their jobs, you know, to go through to do the fire side. But yeah, I do see the revenues are not sustainable currently. Unfortunately, you know, the district has been kicking the can down the road. We've been basically living off of extra revenues we've been getting by sending fire engines to disasters in other parts of the state. And, you know, that's one of those things from a board member, I'm really proud that we're able to help our neighbors, because literally this has been unprecedented. And, you know, we've sent fire engines to Ventura, to Healdsburg, you know, Sonoma County. We've sent them to Paradise. And the letters that we get from those communities just seem to come in all year long. So it's just very heartwarming to be able to do our part. And the state does bring some revenue. And that's what we've been living off of. That's how we've been able to keep, you know, our – that's that math problem going
that's
back
the,
to
yeah,
your Eureka High math.
I know it stunned you that I made it through, huh?
Well, yeah. So that's not sustainable. First of all, it burns out our staff to send them out of town, because when you send a staff, you know, a crew out on a fire engine, they're gone for a week or 2 weeks, and then people have to backfill here. So it's really hard on the organization. So we're not doing it for the money. But, you know, it has helped, you know, the budget, us balance the budget in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years in doing so. We're hoping that, you know, we're going to have to find other ways to get some more revenue in order to balance this budget.
So it's both more volunteers.
More
and,
revenues.
And revenues. If somebody is interested in volunteering, you know, where do they go, knock on a door at a fire station and say, hey, I'm kind of interested in trying to figure out what's going on?
Yeah, the best thing to do is come to the fire station, our headquarters office up in McKinneyville, and first thing is usually I try to meet with them or one of my chief officers to kind of vet them to, okay, are you sure you want to? Because we were, you know, kind of back to your previous question about the college and you know, we rely a lot on recruiting out of the college. And we did this mass recruitment over a couple years. We got huge numbers of people volunteering in the beginning, and then they got in and were like, wait a minute, I've got to get up at 2 a.m. and go, but I got class the next day, or you require 200 hours of basic training before I can, I just want to go ride on the fire engine. So, you know, while we cast the net and we got a big thing, so we've kind of learned that you got to put some of those big, scary points out in front. Okay, do you have 2 hours? Are you willing to give me a 3-year commitment? Because, you know, we're investing in you. If I can't get my return on investment, you know, my board members are going to go, wait a minute, we're losing money. I mean.
Now, I would suspect that is kind of the source of your support team going out. Okay, if you don't have the hours to volunteer, you know, you can figure out how to put a bottle of water in some ice.
Sure.
And, you know, thaw out a hamburger, that kind of thing. So folks can help, even if they're not willing to make that level of commitment.
And that's exactly where that logistics team came from. It was actually, I'm very proud of, we had a promotional process. And one of the questions was, identify a problem in the organization and a solution. So here out of this promotional process, one of my now captains came up with this plan, because we had a lot of senior volunteer firefighters that they didn't want to hang it up yet, but you know, they don't want to, their bodies can't keep up with the fight and the fires. And so this is kind of where this team started, was for guys like you know, Dave Goodman and Dave White that 40 some odd years in the organization and still have time to give. And then it kind of morphed, because we would get people that said, hey, I want to help, but I don't want to do firefighting because that's too scary. And we have this really good group of folks that come out and assist on incidents. I mean, we've even loaned them out to the sheriff's department for incidents. They'll go out and be scene support for them. And it's been a huge success, so much so that, you know, some of the other agencies, fire agencies, are kind of looking at it going, huh, can we, here's all my notes, have at it, because it's really good. You got dedicated individuals, especially former firefighters, and you don't want to kick them to the curb. You want to keep them engaged and, you know, that institutional knowledge of what's going on in the community and the organization has been huge.
Well, I wouldn't think that there's concern about it being a proprietary idea.
Oh, gosh, no.
I mean, if we can help out Maple Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like somebody's going to be driving from there to help you out in McKinleyville. I hope.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Now, Randy, the other thing, you know, you got grants, with your financial background, these concepts of bonds and long-term funding, is that something that fire departments or special districts do on a fairly regular basis? We're familiar with some of the other special districts in the neighborhood, and they've got these big projects, and there are fees associated with that. Is that an option that's out there for the district?
Well, bonds are generally for building projects, you know, so like if you have a sewer district, you know, wastewater district is going to do bonds. They're going to have to do bonds to redo the wastewater treatment plant because that's, you know, in the millions. You can't sell bonds for personnel. So our biggest thing is personnel. But on the positive side for the taxpayers of our fire district is there is no debt for buildings. You know, we have good buildings, and that's part of the volunteer. The volunteers have taken on that task, and so we have no debt service for buildings. So that's a very definite thing that we have, where a lot of agencies like ours does not.
Now, there's something on the ballot coming up next month in March. Is that something? Is that your Measure A?
It's
reinvented.
It's reinvented. Yeah,
Measure
R is coming up on the March ballot, and that's just specifically because, as Randy mentioned, there's special districts, and within the special districts realms, there's a couple different types. There's an enterprise district that sells something. In our case, up in the McKinleyville area, McKinleyville CSD sells water to consumers, and so they can set a price. Well, I'm not selling anything. I'm providing a service. And there's a very specific in law how the district can set a tax. So either it's a benefit assessment where the property owners vote to assess themselves a charge for fire protection services, or there's a special tax, requires a two-thirds majority vote, and that's a little bit more general as far as the fire department collecting that. So that's what Measure R is a special tax coming up. And
so you need the two-thirds.
We need the two-thirds.
Now, it's interesting that a special tax for a special district, that you would have to worry about the two-thirds rather than just getting the simple majority.
Because it's earmarked for specifics. So much like Measure Z, Measure O was a sales tax, a general tax, it didn't have that high threshold. And so that's always my fears as the chief, and I'm sure the board's the same thing, is you really got to hit that upper approval from your constituents.
Well, I would think, Randy, that part of the stuff that keeps the board awake is some of the history that you've experienced also, is that, okay, you can get 60% and it still doesn't work. And you've got that core that's know everything.
That's right.
And so you're really looking at 75 or 80% of the voters who are voting that are going to be making a decision about whatever the issue is.
That's right. I've been on the board is about 3 years now, and since I've been here, I know that I've seen the staff and the board work really hard at trying to get the word out so that people understand. My feeling is that when people understand what we do and how we do it and what we need to do it in terms of funding it, it's a no-brainer, because I can tell you that this organization is the pencil sharpened. I mean, Justin has saved money everywhere he can possibly, and the board has worked with, and the staff and the volunteers, everybody's been working together really hard to trim as trim can be. You know, for instance, you know, looking back, one of the difficult things was the volunteers. You know, we had a lot of people on as firefighter side volunteers. Well, that was really expensive. If they weren't coming to calls, the workers' comp rate was very high. You know, it's $3,000, you know, to outfit a firefighter. So the chief really had to look at some of those things and trim where if people weren't able to put in the time, he had to say, you know, come over to the logistics side because we can't afford to keep you on the payroll because we're cutting the budget, we're trimming everywhere possible. That was one of the more difficult ones.
Well, and even if you're not being compensated, it doesn't mean that there's not
right.
cost associated with
sure.
that individual.
It's huge. It was, you know, that's a lot of money, you know. So that was really hard because that did kind of change the tenor of the department because those kind of costs have come up dramatically since the time when I showed up in Arcata back in the 70s. So that's one of the big institutional changes that has been hard for the organization. But we are now a very lean organization, but I think very effective, and I think it's well organized. So our job is to get out in the community and try to answer questions to people, address their concerns, and listen and make and try to tell them what we're doing.
So how do you measure efficiency in a fire department? I mean, typically, you know, if I was talking with a paid staff, it would be response times. Okay, that's pretty simple for some of us to figure out. But for this scenario and with this measure that's put forth, how do people go, yeah, okay, they really, they're as efficient as they can be.
So
it's time.
You got an interesting question. So I guess, you know, does government run efficient? You know, my two cents is probably not. But I would like to think that in our organization we are trying to be, because I can't just go print more money. I don't have the ability to go, hey, we're gonna pass a sales tax. You know, I get what I get, and we have to live within that confines of it. So things that I look at efficiency are, you know, is the public unhappy with how we're spending their taxpayers' dollars? And overall, I haven't heard that. The other side of it is on our performance. Do we get to the scene within 5 minutes? There's another measure, being that we go on EMS calls, the ambulance shows up, we can go on lift assist, we can help, you know, things like that. But the one thing that nobody else does that we do is puts out fires. And so if we weren't here, what would happen if a fire was left uncontrolled? You know, it's eventually going to burn out. It'll burn to the Pacific Ocean and, you know, it won't go any further. So we look at it as a dollar lost, dollar saved. And, you know, the stats from last year alone were a little over $64 million in dollars saved and the property value saved. So if we weren't here and we weren't doing our job, the community would have lost over $64 million in property and contents.
So the anti-guy is going to say, okay, so $64 million, you save that. If this passes, how much more would we save?
Well, that's...
That's, I suppose, is probably where their perspective is.
Sure,
an awful lot.
It depends. It depends on the call. I mean, the unthinkable happened to us here this last year, and we had a fire on the east side of the plaza. I mean, I can remember every chief, Archie Bernardi and all of them, talking about the east side of the plaza. It never burned. And, you know, we pre-planned it, we looked at it, and every chief prior to me, I'm sure, sweated over the concept. And lo and behold, on my watch, here we go. We were lucky enough to save it. But other than that, I mean, if we didn't have those firefighters on duty at the Arcata station, it would have been a totally different outcome. And I can tell you, being the only firefighter on duty in 2001 when Marinos and the Environmental Center was on fire, it took me 5.5 minutes to get there from the Mad River Fire Station, and we were outgunned and outnumbered from the get-go. And, well, the lot where the Environmental Center is still an empty lot. Look at the corner lot there at 9th and H sat vacant for years when the drugstore burned down. Same thing next to the Alibi. So, you know, when buildings burn down, they don't come back really quick. And the loss that we sustain or the value saved is way different than the economic loss in the community. So Tomo's had a fire. Their fish tank caught fire. Pretty minor, very smoky. And they were out of business for 8 months. Their employees found jobs elsewhere. There's no tax revenue to the city. I mean, there are cascading events. The mattress store in Arcata is still closed. The Big Blue, I don't know if they're coming back.
The Ripples.
Yeah, Solutions, I had heard, is closing. So, I mean, for a really minor fire for us, we had it out, we didn't burn the buildings down, has some far-reaching effects. So the more staffing, the quicker we can get to calls, we can keep fires small and extinguished, is going to pay dividends, because you don't have that loss of tax revenue. You don't have that loss of business. And
now, how big is the district?
62 square miles.
Which probably means nothing to most of us.
So it is...
Population, roughly?
About 37,000 people.
Okay. So North Bay kind of wrapped around down to Freshwater and out on the spit.
Yeah, so if you take from the Samoa Bridge in Manila and Indianola and go north, we stop up there in between the two parking lots at Clam Beach, and we go out to about Glendale. So it's a pretty good chunk of real estate that we cover. As far as fire district sizes, we're one of the larger districts, both in land mass and population.
So that's the communities of McKinleyville, Arcata, Bayside, Manila, and Jacoby Creek?
Yep.
So the measure, if it passed, how much is it? Is it a per parcel assessment?
It's based on a parcel and what's being used. So a vacant lot, a single family residence, multifamily, commercial, industrial. So it's a kind of a sliding scale, and the concept is what's on it, what's the risk of a fire, and how much resources is it going to take. So an empty lot is the cheapest, obviously, and an industrial parcel would be a lot more because of the risk.
It replaces the tax from 1997. So the last tax, it would replace that one on your tax bill.
So for an average, let's say $300,000 home, what are you looking at?
Well, first off, has nothing to do with the value. it's a flat rate, and so for Measure R, it's $118 a year.
So about 35 cents a day. Mm-hmm. in that neighborhood.
Yep.
So that's the thing, you know, to put a value on it, it's something that you might use once in your whole lifetime. You might dial 911 once. You might not dial 911, but the chances are all of us knows somebody who has had to dial 911, who has needed these services. And really, when you need them, you know, it could be in the middle of the night, it could be on weekends or nights, and we need to have trained staff ready at all times. You know, we can't close on Sunday or on holidays.
Now, there's an insurance benefit to this, as I recall also. If this passes, are people going to see a little bit of relief on their insurance? Or if it doesn't pass, are they going to see a little kick?
Well, I think that's probably more of a correct statement. So every fire department out there is rated through the Insurance Services Bureau. And when the last assessment went through, we were able to increase our staffing and open a second station. And then with that grant, we were able to open up a third station. Well, we increased our protection class. We're at a 3, which is really, in the grand scheme of things, for us and locally, is really good. You know, obviously, we're not going to be a class 1. That's LA City or, you know, those big agencies. They've got fire stations 5 minutes apart. There's 4 people on fire engines, you know. So I'm really proud of the fact that we have a 3. But we're just barely a 3. And any hiccup that we have, and the biggest hiccup that we're going to see is a loss of staffing based on our budget, will directly impact that rating. Now, how does that affect your fire insurance? Well, 2 years ago, probably wouldn't have been too much of an issue. But since the car fire, since the Tubbs fire, since Paradise, insurance companies are now really starting to scrutinize where your fire hydrant is, how your performance of your fire department is, what, you know, all of these factors. And we're seeing here locally in our fire district, people losing fire insurance because of
the rural nature.
They're rural, and you know, it's not just commercial, it's residential. I mean, it's a combination of everything. So in my humble opinion as your local fire chief, I think it's hugely important that that this is part of that bigger picture. You know, people investing in the fire department helps their community, it helps their insurance rates, it helps all of that. It's not just a, you know, kind of a one-off, we just need more money, because, you know, there's reasons behind it.
So what does the future look like for the district? Are you guys, do you have big plans, big schemes, new stuff, kind of, has it been built out? I mean, going down to Clam Beach, all right, McKinleyville's not that far away, but it's not right there, and running out Old Arcata Road, well, yeah, there's a station there, but by the time you get out, you make the turn, you wiggle through this, wiggle through that. Would there be plans if population either continued to grow or more development was occurring to have something kind of out Jacoby Creek area?
Well, I have to say thank God for the future, the past generations when they built the fire stations, you know, McKinleyville and Mad River and Arcata. They actually put them in the right spots. You know, it wasn't, this is the only empty lot, let's put it here. They're strategically located. Mad River Fire Station out by the hospital is in the geographic center of the fire district. It's right next to the highway on-ramp. It can get out and be on the road. The core of where our call volume is, plus the greatest risk, the greatest value, is downtown Arcata. And we have a station right there. I can have a fire engine on scene in a couple minutes, starting to take action. If the population really starts to get dense out in Jacoby Creek or maybe up north in Dawes Prairie, we may have to look at putting a station out there. But according to the projections from the county and even from McKinleyville, you know, they're pretty static. The zoning's not going to allow for high-density housing like they do within the city limits of Arcata. You know, that's a component that's starting to make me a little bit nervous, is these three-story buildings popping up in downtown.
Buildings. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's a whole different firefighting tactical challenge. You know, single-family, single-story residence, yeah, you know, that's we got that. A three-story building, you know, now we have to start, we have to change our tactics and our training on that.
Well, I would think pieces of gear, too, if you were having to respond to one of the dorms on fire at Humboldt.
Yes.
Or you got one of these three- or four-story buildings, you know, you can stand on the ground all you want and throw water up. It's not going to really help you out too much.
Yeah, that's where the ladder truck comes into play. And, you know, when Eureka bought their ladder truck, the thing just empty. Was $1 million price tag, and you know, that is again comes out of the district coffers to keep up with the community's growth.
Now the Measure R, would that go towards equipment?
So yes, Measure R is to refill those three vacant positions, retain the employees that we have that are on the kind of that chopping block to that federal grant picked up. And then the third component of it is to repair and establish a vehicle replacement fund. So when it comes time to replace fire engines, you know, $600,000, $700,000, we have some money in reserve that we can put towards that.
And I have to say, as a board member, that's one of the things that really bothers me is that we having to pay interest on a $600,000 fire engine. I mean, that, you know, the interest on that over a period of time could mean a good chunk of someone's salary. So if we could have a vehicle replacement fund, because fire engines last was 30 years.
If we're lucky.
and that's one of the things that Justin has been doing as chief. He's been using pickups a lot for medical aid calls so we can save the wear and tear on the fire engines as much as possible, and he saved a lot of fuel, you know, so we're trying to stretch them out as much as possible. But we could really do better for our citizens if we could start a vehicle, you know, apparatus, that's the term for in a fire service, is apparatus, replacement fund, and then we would save a huge amount on interest. So that's one of the I believe the board is very interested in being able to do that.
Fundraising efforts, just regular old fundraising. I mean, you hear the stories about the barbecues and the pie and cake sales and things of that nature. Are there opportunities for folks to support on that level, either providing product or attending various events? Yeah, you know, there's the great Ralph Altsheiser quote that we won't reference, but it's taken on its own historical mystique in the region.
Oh, yes, it has.
Yes.
And we won't let him forget it.
Good, good, good. You know, we need to archive that. It won't be on our website, even though this was the source. It'll be on your guys. But are there events and opportunities for folks to be able to support if they're not in the district or, you know, they're not going to bequeath $300,000 for a new fire truck?
Well, you know, we don't, we're not doing as many fundraisers. I remember back when I joined, we were doing like once a month, we were putting on a barbecue because firefighters seem to be really good at cooking and eating. You know, we would host these functions. We partnered up with Randy's Rotary Group to raise money for the fire station. And, you know, I think there's still some opportunities that our volunteer group that they can partner up with to raise money. But again, much like grants, much like it's a one-time thing. You know, if somebody wants to purchase a piece of equipment for us, you know, and they do a fundraising effort, that's great. But when I'm looking down the road, it's staffing, it's career people on duty, ready to go. And, you know, it's hard to hire somebody and say, well, I don't know if I'm going to have the funding 2 years from now, or, you know, nobody's going to want that job.
Finally, board members, not that Randy's going anywhere, but if somebody is interested in being a board member, how often do those positions come up? Randy, what kind of commitment does it take to be an active board member for a fire district? I mean, you never hear about those things. You know, every once in a while, typically it's, geez, nobody's running. We're going to have to go and find somebody to appoint.
Well,
not necessarily the best way to do it.
It's interesting how that happened because I was at a Rotary meeting one morning and the fire chief came and he said, we need a board member for your district. You see, Arcata's is set up into five different zones or divisions. And Justin knew where I lived. And he goes, you know, will you apply? You know, we need a board member. So, you know, I ended up going there and I think he lied to me because he said it was only like one meeting a month. And I'll tell you, it's a part-time job sometimes. there's a lot to do.
Well, there's one board meeting a month. I didn't tell you about all the rest of the stuff.
I'll tell you, we have an incredible fire chief. Justin has done so much to improve the department and to build the department and the district. You know, he keeps his board members very busy, and we have a lot going on, and you know, everything from the strategic plan to you know, to the budget, you know, to new auditors, and so I'm really, in the 3 years that I've been here, it's been really gratifying to be able to work with this great group, and I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, not particularly. Apparently, he must enjoy what he's doing, Justin, because he doesn't want to give it up.
Well, I know we just lost one board member who retired after, was it 19 years?
Mm-hmm.
John Davis was on the board for 19 years. And then Linda Sundberg, how many years was she on the board?
Gosh, I think she was upwards of 12 or something.
12
like
years. So
pretty stable
board
group.
Members tend to take a long time. We do have a fairly new board now. So
we don't have to worry about that at this point.
Not as of yet, but you know, our board members, they're elected, and anybody can challenge them every 4 years. Randy would be up for an election. In fact, we had last year for Division 5, somebody ran against the incumbent, didn't get it, but you know, it was one of those things that wow, okay, somebody's interested out there, and that's always good. And I think more than anything, my request is if people are interested, please come to our board meetings. You know, we have a board meeting and it's for public engagement and we ask for public comment and it's nobody's there. And either we're doing the right thing and everybody supports us or, you know, we're this kind of unknown in the community. So I would hope it's the everybody supports us. But
board meetings are second Tuesday of each month at 5:30 p.m. at the Arcata Station, downtown Arcata.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one at the plaza.
The plaza,
just off
right.
the plaza. Yeah.
Just in case someone could be confused.
And the board agendas are posted on the district's website, arcatafire.org.
Geez, getting all the things in there last minute, huh? Thanks for coming by, guys, and sharing the backstory. This was fun.
Thanks
and
for having
hopefully,
us.
It'll spur some people to do a little bit more research about the measure, and possibly about joining the staff,
becoming engaged.
There you go.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.